Today on Movie Wildlife, we review Spring Breakers, Olympus Has Fallen, and Admission. It's time for Movie Wallers. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
And Yazdi as well.
Movie Wallers is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Hello again.
Hello.
Hello. Greetings.
All here together in person again.
Yay.
Yes.
And the cat has just accosted Yazdi.
She loves Yazdi.
As she does.
She loves
does
Yazdi.
Like Yazdi.
As she's wont to do.
Here she
yes.
comes.
Here she comes.
She's going to sit on your notebook.
It's those dulcet tones.
We're all well fed. It's the end of a work day. We've earned our keep, and now we can talk about films.
And just to prove that Movie Wallers is live, that was the cat knocking Yazdi's microphone. Our home studio is a little chaotic today. It's all about the cats.
It's organic.
It is
There's
organic.
Nothing
yeah.
sterile about our podcast.
It's true. The Movie Wallers.
There's
Waller
nothing
cats.
Professional either. All right, so we have three movies to talk about today. I'm excited to talk about at least two of them. So we have Olympus Has Fallen, Spring Breakers, and Admission. So where do you want to start? Olympus Has Fallen?
Olympus Has Fallen.
And who's going to introduce that one?
I have that one.
Go for it.
So when the White House Secret Service code Olympus is captured by a terrorist mastermind and the president is kidnapped, disgraced former presidential guard Mike Banning finds himself trapped within the building. As our national security team scrambles to respond, they are forced to rely on Banning's inside knowledge to help retake the White House, save the president, and avert an even bigger crisis. Antoine Fuqua, who you may know from Training Day, directs an all-star cast featuring Gerard Butler, Aaron Eckhart, Morgan Freeman, Angela Bassett, Melissa Leo, Ashley Judd, and Rick Yoon. So, who wants to go first? Now that the cat has sat on Yazdi's notes, Yazdi, why don't you go first?
So, the best compliment I can give this movie is that it reminded me repeatedly of Die Hard. And not in a, you know, it suffers by comparison kind of way, but in a, God, I've really missed Die Hard sort of way. And I think most of the film reviewers have mentioned the movie is Die Hard in White House. But, you know, Joe, you and I have spoken about this. I mean, I think the world of Die Hard. I mean, it is on my list of, you know, movies to take if I'm stranded on a island. And this movie reminded me of Die Hard in a very good way. So it has 100 problems that, you know, it's nothing special. It's an action movie, but I liked it.
Joe.
Yeah, this follows the Die Hard playbook to the letter. I think there's more than a passing resemblance here. It follows almost every single beat of Die Hard. You know, you have the siege, you have the ex-cop, or perhaps somebody who's not really supposed to be in the situation getting mixed up in things. You have the rooftop rescue that goes awry. I mean, that was right from Die Hard.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that.
The hostage situation, in this case, it's the president's son instead of the wife in Die Hard. And you have the terrorist whose demands, at least at the beginning, are unclear and they become clear. So, for me, it felt like such a rewrite of Die Hard. That said, this is goofy stuff. There's fun and guns and explosions everywhere. But it's an honest movie. It's trying to be something, and it achieves what it set out to be, and I enjoyed it overall.
So Die Hard also came to my mind, and I wrote down Die Hard. So let me take another point then. So firstly, it's strange to me that the poor North Koreans have become the enemy of today. So we just saw them in Red Dawn. Now they appear again, and they've replaced the Russians of yesteryear. But that aside, this movie for me, although it was fun, was a little bit too much explosion and not enough story. I will give it props, though, for the amount of tension it created, though, because at times my heart was beating out of my chest.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen these kinds of movies before, haven't we? We've seen Battle LA or Battleship or any of those, you know, them versus us kind of rah-rah fight to the finish line. And I think we've seen this being done badly or sloppily often enough that when it's done well, I think I've learned to recognize it. So again, you know, I think by no means is this movie perfect, but I like that there is a kind of a workmanlike pride to how it has been assembled. It's mm-hmm. a very muscular action movie.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's, there is, the, I think the word you used is honesty. Is that what you said? I forget the exact word that you used, but I think this movie knows what it wants to be and it's not very sloppy about it. I mean, when it wants to create tension, I think it does right. a very admirable job of creating tension. And moment by moment, I kind of walked along with the movie. And usually I'm rolling my eyes at these kinds of things. And yes. I wasn't rolling my eyes at all while I watched it.
Yeah, it's true, because it works really hard. I mean, it's a really hard-working yeah. movie. And in the moment, you know, this is strange because, you know, Gerard Butler saves the world. But I believed it. It yeah. was believable, even though I kept kind of thinking, this is too much explosion, this is too much blood, this is too much killing. I can't believe they're ripping up the White House and all of Washington. I enjoyed it in the moment.
I mean, I find it hard to go along with, I'll be honest. I mean, I think the whole setup to me was ridiculous. The way that they got into the White House and set up the mm-hmm. whole hostage situation that you had, just, I had a hard time buying it. And I also, you know, I'm sure we'll get to talking about performances, but Gerard Butler as a leading action guy was not something that I bought at all. I mean,
really?
I couldn't take him seriously.
But he's the king of Sparta.
Yes, he is. But you know what bothered me here? His accent. He had this American tough guy accent. And he had, you know, he did the kind of the Hugh Laurie thing in House, you know, where he goes all growly and he's going to talk like an American action hero. And it didn't, it really didn't.
That was good.
I couldn't buy it. I mean, it was just, it just didn't work for me. So I think that's probably the hardest thing I had to deal with in terms of keeping myself engaged with what was going on.
I didn't find his, well, I don't want to call it performance because it's not a performance, but I didn't find his acting particularly show-offy. I just found him, you know, very, very acceptable, very satisfactory.
Yeah. He wasn't the thing I hated about the movie.
Oh, you and hated
I didn't,
something.
No, I didn't hate the movie, but I just found that it lacked story. It was all too easy. It was hard, then it was all too easy.
Yeah, no, that's a fair enough point. I mean, I think, again, when you have one man versus an army,
yeah,
it's not, you know, it's the kind of thing that in the 80s we used to buy all yeah. the time. You know, this was my kind of bread and butter growing up. You had this, literally this one guy in a situation, insurmountable odds, and he prevails. And so nowadays, we find that a little harder to accept readily because he has to be some kind of super guy. And they don't, you know, he has no superpowers, for example, in this movie yet. He has this instinct that always gives him an edge in a particular
Plus
situation.
Plus, he's a highly trained agent. I mean, you know, the setup is that he's a
and the
highly
who
trained agent.
The White House
who...
from overseas aren't the equivalent Gerard Butlers of their country.
Right.
So, you know, I think just in terms of plausibility, we struggle with that.
Of course.
So you have to just back off and just say, this isn't that kind of serious movie. And just
right.
Let
I mean,
it, let
exactly. I was going to say, yeah, wait a minute, guys. I mean, we're not talking about the Tree of Life. Here.
Yeah.
I mean, this is, you know, this is an action movie made by yeah. Anthony Fuqua. And,
yeah.
You know.
I must say, I was a little bit disappointed because Training Day was so good.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's more of a character movie. I don't think this is as much. If you're going in and expecting some character type stuff here, there's very little of that. This is a all-out action movie.
Yeah. The other part which surprises me is, and this is why I want to know how the script for this movie developed, because it's very specific, it's very particular. You know, like you said, it kind of pushes credibility in terms of these people kind of essentially just taking control over the White House, which is the most protected, you know, building in the whole world. And it turns out there is a second movie coming out called White House Down.
With
with Channing Tatum. I mean, this movie could have been called White House Down.
Yeah.
In fact, Olympus Has Fallen is code word for White House Down.
Yeah.
And they have another movie coming out in summer.
Really?
With exactly the same premise. So I don't know. How does this happen? Why do movies always come out in
June? Yeah, I wonder.
It's obviously competing studios. You know, some studio boss comes along. He sees that a movie's being made. He slams his fist on a desk and says, I want me a movie like that. make it, damn it. And this is how they come together. It must be. It can only be.
Yeah, yeah. All the patents on White House movies have run out, maybe, and now they're everyone's pickings. I don't know.
It's just odd, yeah.
And they probably piggyback off each other's marketing. I mean, it must do. It doesn't make sense.
So we haven't talked about Morgan Freeman and Angela Bassett and Aaron Eckhart. And I mean, there are so many people in this movie. All of whom are
entirely adequate in this movie.
Yeah.
I always like Morgan Freeman. I always smile when I see him.
Yeah.
I like Melissa Leo. I didn't even know it was Melissa Leo until the very end.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course it was intentional. They did her hair and her face a particular kind of way. And yeah. I don't know if she was meant to represent...
the every woman.
Hillary.
Hillary Clinton.
She was meant to be a Secretary of State just like Hillary Clinton. Why else would you have a female Secretary of State? How many female Secretaries of State have there been? I guess there have been quite
Madeleine
a few.
Madeleine Albright.
But...
yeah.
It's Condi.
All right. Yeah,
they're all women, actually, Joe.
But no, yeah. There was no mistaking that she was set up to be a Hillary Clinton in this
complete
movie.
With 80s power suit.
Like when we do
which
the,
was interesting
when
to
we
me.
Do the Hillary Clinton biopic, Melissa Leo is going for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, anything else to say on this one, or should we wrap this one up?
Yeah, so, you know, yes, this film begins and ends with scenes of the American flag unfurling, but I did not find the movie offensively jingoistic. I actually have admiration for a movie which takes such a tired concept and makes it, you know, makes it really work. And I think as an action movie, this movie is tremendously successful. I actually enjoyed it. I wanted to hate it, but against my better judgment, it won me over. Somewhere between a 7 and an 8, I'm going to settle for 7 out of 10 right now. And this is the kind of movie I would recommend anybody to watch. I'd ask my brother-in-law to watch, my nieces to watch, my family to watch. It's kind of a no fuss, you know, have a good time at the cinema for 2 hours kind of movie.
Joe?
Yeah, I mean, this is above mediocrity. There are so many ways that this movie could have been derailed by many of the nonsensical plot elements that are in the movie, but overall it was a good time. I mean, it was fun, like I said at the beginning, fun, guns, explosions. You know, I wished it had been perhaps a little bit more clever, and I wished it hadn't followed every single beat that Die Hard seemed to, you know, it really just felt like somebody had crossed out a few elements in the Die Hard script and reshot the movie. But that said, it was effective, it was fun. I'm going to give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, for me, this was a souped-up Independence Day without the traditional aliens. I didn't think it was a great movie, but it was a good movie, and I think it's a great Friday night movie to decompress to. I think the fact that it relies on some images that are probably a little bit too close to 9/11 make it a little bit uncomfortable to watch it sometimes, but I had a good time, probably about a 6 out of 10 for me. I wish there'd been more story, too, like I said in the beginning.
A good, clean action movie. And this is very violent, by the way.
I would say good, bloody
I wouldn't recommend this
action
for young children. I mean, I think teenagers will have a riot, but young children, there are some disturbing violence
in this movie.
Like
too
bone-crunchingly
much.
Painful stuff.
I know, but I almost admire it because, you know, these days, due to marketing considerations, all the action movies, all the horror movies are PG-13, and they're always kind of, you know, dancing around that line. And this movie just said, to hell with it, we're going to go there. And they're just like gruesomely 80s violent. And, you know, people meet their death in very violent ways.
Yeah.
And, you know,
you say that as you rub your hands gleefully together, Yazzie.
All right, let's move on to our second movie then, Spring Breakers. Yazdi, you want to intro this one too?
Certainly. So Spring Breakers is the latest provocation from the notorious director Harmony Korine, who gained said notoriety by co-writing the film Kids with Larry Clark, and for himself by directing the movies Gummo, Julian Donkey Boy, and last year's Trash Humpers. Yes, you heard that right. This film revolves around the exploits of four teenage girls played by Selena Gomez, Vanessa Hudgens, Ashley Benson, and I believe the director's own wife, Rachel Korine. Seemingly representing the current nihilistic, morally untethered contemporary youth, or is it meant to be a satire? I don't know. These four girls land up robbing a restaurant during a spring break. They are bailed out by a drug dealer named Alien, played by James Franco, who of course has some major, major expectations from the girls in return. That in a nutshell is Spring Breakers. This is a movie I have not seen. I know the both of you have. This movie has gotten a lot of press. It's made a lot of money against expectations. So I'm very eager to hear what you guys have to say about it. Joe?
So before we talk about the movie, this is one of the movies that we did get to preview at South by Southwest. We missed the premiere, unfortunately. That was one that conflicted with some other stuff that was going on that night. But, you know, we did get to see an audience with the director, three of the leads. I think Vanessa Hudgens wasn't there, but the other three were. And it was a movie I was really excited to see based on the few minutes that we got to see at South by Southwest. Rashmi?
Sure. So this is an overtly sexual MTV Gone Wild type of movie. This is like an extended pop video for most of its duration, but that's not to say that it shouldn't be watched. I was more intrigued than bowled over, but I liked this movie for the most part, although its narrative is highly flawed and has a ton of holes in it. This wasn't the movie I was expecting to see.
I couldn't wait to see what your reaction was going to be to this because, yeah, the movie looked a certain way, and actually it was very much the movie I expected to see based on the few minutes that we saw and also the trailer. So, you know, basically I can see why a lot of people are not going to like this movie, but count me out of that crowd. I think for a large part it is what you said. It's salacious, it's a sexy visual montage. It's got lots of scenes that are just kind of thrown at you. It blends the folly of youth with social stereotypes. But I think the biggest issue I had with the movie, or rather the biggest thing that I think people would find offensive with this movie, is that the narrative at first is almost non-existent. Mm. It's image after image after image after image, but it's there. There is a story. And about a third of the way into the movie, it really starts to gel and the characters, you know, develop some life to them, and you end up with a narrative that's not told in a traditional overt way, but the sequence of things that you see tells a wonderful story. So I really, really like this movie. The icing on the cake for me was an outstanding performance by James Franco.
Boo.
Yeah, actually, yes, I thought of you with this because I think, you know, we've talked often about James Franco, and I know, Yazdi, one of the things you say is, you know, he'll never do a good movie again. I want you to see this movie because I think he's redeemed himself. He's really committed to this role, and he pulls it off. Mm. I think all of them pull it off. So we heard a lot about how this movie was put together. You know, we got sitting at the panel at South by Southwest, and that was interesting. And having that in my mind, I think, helped me enjoy the movie a little bit more. The main thing for me is I think this movie creates more of a feeling than a complex story, but you need to watch closely, like you said, Joe. A really interesting thing that Harmony Korine does, and clearly he's talented, not only because he can do these amazing unbroken shots that are done in one take, hence they're called unbroken, but also because the dialogue of the movie and the music in the movie, and there are sounds in the movie which are on a constant loop. And they're also, I kind of found them a bit subliminal. So there are certain pieces of dialogue that play continuously through the movie. There's a sound of a gun cocking all the way through the movie. There's loops of music that play constantly through the movie. So it creates this feeling. Dreamlike. Yeah.
But the pieces of dialogue are spoken by different characters?
Yeah.
Or it's just in the background?
This is totally not a spoiler, but there's a repeated spring break that kind of pops into the movie every now and then. It seems so random, but it creates a feeling, and so it's very much pop video direction. I mean, I think the best way to describe this movie is like an extended pop video. It has that
loud music, slowed down dancing scene, crowd scenes.
Yeah,
you know, fades in and fades out.
Visual aesthetic. You know, there are incredible use of color. I think the neons of Miami and South Florida are just, they pop everywhere. I think,
Joe, I think that
there's
was
a lot
the,
of use of,
Joe, I think that was the boobs in the bikinis.
Well, I need to talk about that in a second because I've got a point to make about that specifically.
But
there's
points.
A lot of slow motion.
The neons really stuck with Joe. It was all the women's bikinis.
Yeah, for sure. But it also uses a lot of slow motion. Then there's this grainy look that they have. And there's also these MTV-type transitions that they use from scene to scene. I mean, there's a scene of drug use. This is not a spoiler. There's a scene of drug use which almost goes, you know, if anyone has ever used Photoshop or a program like that, and you have all these kind of filters, like artistic filters that you can apply to a picture to make it look like crayon or to make it look like a hand drawn. The movie itself just degenerates into that only for a few seconds, but it really well depicts what's going on. And I thought it was a good was your choice. Again, something very annoying if you and potentially gimmicky if you weren't digging what was going on already. So, you know, it's the kind of movie that if you don't like the first 10 minutes, just leave. It won't get better for you.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, everyone who's been asking me about Spring Breakers, I've said, I don't want to tell you much about the movie, but if you have an interest in this subject matter, then you should go. But, you know, be aware. Don't go with your parents. Don't go with anyone older than you. Don't go with your nieces, Yazdi. I mean, when we sat down in the cinema, there was a ton of teenagers, older teenagers, even some little teenagers that snuck in that I felt quite bad for because I wanted to usher them out. I think it was the
parental instinct.
Yeah, yeah, I wanted to usher them out. But there was a poor dad, and I said to Joe, I said, I really feel sorry for this guy. Because literally the first scene starts, and I just thought, poor guy, I cannot believe he's watching this with his teenage son.
See, but I think they're being very clever in how they're marketing it. They're marketing it as a movie about spring break, and it really is not. It's this whole... Well, the spring break is only the setting, right?
I mean, it's the premise.
Right.
You know, they want to go on spring break. They have no money.
Right.
But it is really about spring break. It's just in as much as The Hangover is like a trip to Vegas, you know? Mm. I mean, it occurs during spring break. You know, they are spring breakers. They are kids who are going on spring break and they do stuff that kids on spring break do.
Such as rob a store.
Just one extra plot element right. there,
yeah.
which is obviously what the movie is about. Otherwise, yeah. it would be Girls Gone Wild.
Right, right.
And talking about that, can we just talk about the boobs? Because, I mean, I don't know how to put it more eloquently, but this director loves boobs. Male boobs,
yeah.
female boobs.
I'm glad you looked at me when you said that.
Boobs everywhere. I mean, I know it's there's a lot of boobs. It, right from the opening scene of the movie, it's like slap in the face, boobs. And it's just a funny thing because it's like the camera just kind of just stares at them.
Well, so, I think you know, go on.
So Harmony Korine worked with Larry Clark. You know, and Larry Clark's done a lot of movies. His last two movies have not been released in the US because they just had very, very strong sexual content. And it all involves teenagers.
Right.
And so I think for the longest time, he's had this, both of them have had this.
It's a been fetish.
Like, it's a cross to bear that they really like very young flesh. Okay.
Yes.
The, you know, young, naked flesh of the very young, like presumably underage. So there's this whole kind of undertow to all their movies, which has kind of been in, you know, their... You know, they're cross to bear because people have really come out strong, accused them of having this obsession with you know, yes. the flesh of the young. And I can see that, you know, in this movie, he's undeterred.
Yeah,
correct.
He cast it accordingly. And, you know, the camera loves these four girls and all the other women in the movie. But, I mean, he really does spend a lot of time looking at them very sexually. I mean, it's a very...
It's again creating a feeling. Let me help you out. So it's basically creating this feeling. They went down to a certain island off Florida, apparently, and they went during spring break last year. And they literally told people, while you are partying and doing your thing, we're going to have a camera here. People are there partying and they're a fly on the wall. So it's not like these people have come here to party, and I'm not by any means saying this is what everyone does on spring break, but there is a certain part of the population that go out and do this, and all he's done, I think, Joe, is set up a camera and captured what really happens on some of these places and what the youth
it's
of today
gone
do.
Wild. I mean,
it is Girls Gone Wild.
Girls Gone Wild yeah. things. It's, yeah. it's like that. Oh, if you've gone to like New Orleans, Bourbon Street, that kind of vibe, the MTV stuff that they used to show on, you know, during spring break, you know, that kind of crazy
I actually
shit.
Like that. It's fun. No, it's so silly and salacious and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's literally...
It makes me feel like a dirty old man. I
mean, yeah, but...
And so you both should feel like that.
No, it's fun.
But the interesting thing is, I think the whole thing about this movie is... They spent a lot of time trying to get from Harmony Korine, you know, what was your motive? What was your motivation for getting this movie together? And really, it didn't feel like he was so calculated about it.
Well, no, it was, I think, during South by Southwest when he was being interviewed, the guy from IndieWire, I forget the name of the guy, he started IndieWire. He was the one interviewing him and he was asking him all these really intelligent questions about his filmmaking. And, you know, Harmony Korine was just kind of sat back and said, you know, my filmmaking process is way more organic than that. And I got the sense from him that he sets up some cameras, he sets up a scene. He tries to make it very real. I think he got the girls to kind of room together for a while, just so that they would get that chemistry going on. And then, you know, he has a rough idea of the plot.
I mean, the screenplay was written in 2 weeks. He said he wrote the screenplay in 2 weeks.
And then he puts a camera out there and sees what he gets. And then I think the movie-making genius is in assembling what he gets into this narrative, which is why I think the narrative can irritate people. In some ways, it was like Tree of Life, in that there is a strong narrative there, but it's not an explicit storytelling process.
Because there's no script. So a lot of it is improvised. So he tells them you need to get from point A to point B, and then it's improvised. The whole movie.
So it's not meticulous filmmaking. It's just... It's kind of
how the characters are feeling in the moment as those characters. And then another thing I found very interesting, Joe, I don't know if you picked up on this, is that from the time the cast was assembled, he would send them pictures of things, videos of things, and basically say to them, absorb this. So they really became those characters, I think.
Mm. Yeah.
How does the cast come out?
I think they were great. Honestly, I really enjoyed their performances. I particularly liked Selena Gomez.
Yeah.
And I really liked James Franco. They were my two favorites.
For me, I think three of the girls didn't have that much to do. They were there to be sexy, crazy. Naughty, crazy. Selena Bad. Gomez's character had a little bit more because she was the one that was struggling with what was going on. So her character was came from a kind of a religious background. And,
she was the conscience of the movie in some ways.
So she had, I think, more to do here than the others. And I think she did a great job. I mean, I felt for her when I needed to. I believed in how uncomfortable she was with some of the goings on. And then for me, the standout was James Franco, as I said at the beginning. He was amazing in this. I mean, it was cliche, much of what he was doing. He was doing the kind of, you know, the wigger, you know, the guy with the cornrows and the grills, and he was doing all of the, you know, the black talk, and he was trying to be, you know, kind of the baller drug dealer guy, but he was so believable.
He was so committed to it.
Nuggets that we got here and there about who he was and how he came to be, because there wasn't much. Again, this is not an overt narrative. So what you absorb about the characters is in the little snippets of dialogue here and there. But it felt so real. I really believed that how he came to be had integrity. So again, you know, I bought the movie. I think if you don't buy the movie, this sort of stuff is throwaway details. But if you do, it makes you think about who they were.
Do you want to give it a score? Is that your summary? That sounded like a nice summary.
No, you give your summary
okay.
first.
Okay. So this is definitely, like I said at the beginning, this is definitely not the film I was expecting to see, given all of the marketing and promotion. But it is worth watching if you have any interest in this type of material. This certainly isn't a narrative by any means on the whole culture of Spring Break, and it isn't preachy or taking any sort of position. This is not Girls Gone Wild. This is Girls Gone Stark Raving Bonkers. I really enjoyed this movie. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. Again, I think, as I said at the beginning, you know, you have this issue with kind of a lazy narrative. The storytelling kind of happens as opposed to being laid out in front of you. So I think that's a problem that some people will have with the movie. But it works. It really works. And I think part of the reason it works is because the dialogue itself is very sparse. And I think dialogue written by anyone other than Quentin Tarantino wouldn't fit this very visual style of filmmaking. It would have to be like top-notch dialogue. And so very judiciously, he's left that out. And so, I don't know, for me, it was just a really interesting visual experience. It's not like many movies that I can think of. It's the kind of thing that I think would annoy me in many other regards, but I think it worked just well enough. So I'm going to give this an 8 out of 10 as well. I think it's a terrific movie, and I'm intrigued by Kareen's other works because I have not seen any of his movies. I'd like to see him tackle something, I think, with a bit of a clearer plot, because I think that's one of the things that, you know, he's clearly talented. You know, he conveys a definite feeling, but what was there was just so effective. Good fun.
How many points did all the neon boobs and neon-less boobs Raise your score.
I was going to say, that's probably why I was intrigued rather than annoyed, because, you know, Holy Motors is another movie with this kind of disjointed narrative, like visual feeling, but that one just pissed me off. Here I was just sat there, and at the, you know, in the bits that I guess I was...
If only there were more boobs in Holy Motors.
Right. Boobs make everything better. Pink, neon,
okay,
bouncing, naked, caressed. I mean, that's just...
Okay.
That's, yes, what, that's what happened in this movie.
I can't wait to watch.
I've silenced Rashmi.
I don't know what to say. I think it's got like this. I think all those boobs bouncing around are almost like a hypnotizing effect on all the men in the audience.
I'm a red-blooded male. What can I say?
I wasn't offended by them. You know, I'm the prude, so I wasn't offended by them. No. I think it was just, it's so crazy seeing these kids. And I just thank my lucky stars that I haven't got to worry about a 16, 17, 18-year-old. So to all of our audience who listen with either a 16, 17, 18-year-old who's about to think about going on spring break.
Spring break.
Or going on spring break, I'm so sorry.
I all can't right. wait to watch it.
Let's move on to our third movie of the week, and that is Admission.
Okay, so I have the intro for that. So Tina Fey and Paul Rudd are paired for the first time on screen in Admission. This new comedy drama is directed by Paul Weitz, who's of About a Boy, he's done In Good Company, about the surprising detours we encounter on the road to happiness. Every spring, another spring movie, do we hear? High school seniors anxiously await letters of college admission that will affirm and encourage their potential. At Princeton University, admissions officer Portia Nathan is a gatekeeper evaluating thousands of applicants. Year in and year out, Portia has lived her life by the book, at work as well as the home she shares with Princeton professor Mark. When Clarence, the dean of admissions, announces his impending retirement, the likeliest candidates to succeed him are Portia and her office rival Corinne. For Portia, however, it's business as usual as she hits the road on her annual recruiting trip. So Yazdi, you're the only one that saw this, and I can't say I had a lot of interest in watching this one. I thought this would be more like a back of the plane movie, but prove us wrong, maybe.
I quite like the look of it, and I love the leads. I mean, you know,
Paul Rudd
hasn't been my favorite for a while, but I really like Tina Fey, and
I'm a bit bored
really
of
enjoyed
her.
About a Boy. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping that this movie would have that same feeling.
But let's see how long we can keep talking before Yazdi even gets a word in edgeways about the review.
No, that's fine. I'm surprised at the beating this movie has gotten in the press. I mean, this movie is running pretty low on the Tomato Meter. I actually found it a very smart, well-acted movie with great actors and a story that's not exactly like anything I've seen before.
Hmm.
And I think people are forgetting how difficult it is to make a good-natured, well-intentioned, smart film. And yeah, it is about a lead character who is an admissions officer at Princeton University, but can it not be just about that? I mean, why does it have to be a biting satire on the absolute lunatic machinery of trying to get admission into the top-tier schools in the US today? So I think a lot of the, you know, criticism level that the movie is, oh, it's about an admissions officer, but it really doesn't say anything about how messed up admissions is in the US.
It's not intended to be social commentary, right?
I know. And so this is the thing, you know, the audience who goes to see Admission, they're not the same people who are going to go see Lincoln or even The Master, you know. So why burden this poor movie with making the social commentary? It's like asking Pretty Woman, you know, to be about, to provide an incisive commentary on what it is like to be a hooker in the United States. And that's not the intent of Pretty Woman at all. So I think this movie is just trying to be a gentle, smart, romantic comedy. And I think it's very successful at that. Go on.
So a lot of the criticism is around Tina Fey's performance. And this is the criticism I have. Tina Fey is always Tina Fey. She seems very smart in something like 30 Rock, and her improv is fantastic on Saturday Night Live. But in every movie I've seen, she's the same character. Is that the same thing that's playing out? Because that's certainly some of the themes I'm seeing.
It's not. So yes and no. So yes, she's Tina Fey, but I think this character is a lot less confident. She starts off being very confident, and the Tina Fey character, you know, always is a little self-aware, a little bit smarter than everybody else. And she starts off that way. But, you know, I think a third into the movie, you know, she's falling and crumbling, and, you know, the rest of the movie is her just spiraling out of control. Mm. So from that perspective, she's not Tina Fey. But again, I think I'm absolutely the wrong person to ask that question, because I pray at the church of Tina Fey. I mean, I think, you know, nobody does writing as good as she does. And I think one other thing, I mean, I've watched every single episode of 30 Rock and then some multiple times, and I think nobody really does, you know, these facial shots, these reaction shots, as well as Tina Fey. I mean, you know, somebody says something and, you know, just her expression on the face, I think, is priceless. Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate her, and I think something's right with the world when, you know, a 40-something, you know, person who's had a couple kids, you know, can headline a movie which is a romantic comedy. And I think, you know, I would love to see a movie where Amy Poehler is the lead. Right. You know, why aren't those movies being made? And apparently nobody wants to see Tina Fey. I mean, a lot of the, if you go and look at the reviews to a lot of these movies, it's very hostile. You know, people are very, very upset with Tina Fey. They're like, who thought to put her, you know, in a romantic comedy? And she's, you know, pretty, you know, dash, offensive stuff, you know. So I think people seem to really have a problem with Tina Fey, and I find that very puzzling.
I don't know why one would criticize her for being Tina Fey. I mean, I think that kind of thing really annoys me, because oftentimes these people get cast, and I think with it being Tina Fey, I don't think she has any illusions of being, you know, a complex Meryl Streep type actress who can play a variety of different roles. Tina Fey is always going to get hired to be Tina Fey. That's why you bring her in. That's why you pay her millions of dollars, because she does that and she's brilliant at it. No one else can do it better. So those kind of things really irritate me when people say that.
I'm one of those people. So I think where I get disdainful of Tina Fey is that it never really feels like she's working hard. It just feels like she's turning up and doing her thing and then going home and collecting a big paycheck. And that's great for Tina Fey, but when I've paid $12 to go and see a movie, I want to see something a little bit different. Because if I wanted to see Tina Fey, I would watch reruns of 30 Rock. No, but
so that's what I mean. So watch this movie. I mean, she plays, you know, a woman who's an admissions officer at Princeton who kind of has this, you know, crisis of conscience. Okay, so she's the person who picks students, and, you know, there is 10,000 people who apply for Princeton, and, you know, only a handful which gets picked. And, you know, if something's in your resume which pisses her off, that's it. You know, your career is ruined. And, you know, so she plays this very judgmental, you know, of course you didn't work hard enough, of course your grades weren't good enough, until she gets thrown, you know, a googly. I mean, is that the right word? Yes.
That works for me.
Yeah, I mean, until she gets thrown a curveball, and there is a personal association. I don't want to give too much away, but something happens and it has its direct personal association with her. And she starts questioning all of this, everything she's been doing up until that point. And so I really, from that point onwards, she stops being Tina Fey. She starts being this person who's like, oh, my life is messed up. You know, what does my whole life mean? Kind of thing.
Right.
And so I kind of liked her from that perspective. Right. I do want to say, so this movie is not written by her. It's based on a novel which is out there. There's one thing that the Tina Fey character does towards the end of the movie, which for me was just completely unacceptable. It was just objectionable. Even as lovely and as lovable and adorable as she is, she does something which for me was, there was no going back. I was like, okay. You know, so I think that really took away from me. It took away that character from me in terms of, I think Julia Roberts did something like that in that movie, My Best Friend's Wedding. I think she does something which really nobody should do. And so, you know, the Tina Fey character does something here which is similar. But, I mean, I do want to especially talk about Lily Tomlin, who plays her mom here. I mean, talk about a scene stealer. I mean, she plays this prototypical 70s feminist mom, you know, who's just completely killing her daughter with her judgments about how much of a failure she is. And it, even as I'm saying this sounds such a cliche and such
but
a bored thing.
That sounds very similar to me to the Bridesmaid movie and the Kirsten Wiig's mother.
Yeah, but this is a one whole level above it.
Okay, I mean, sounds very similar in...
Yeah.
In its sensibility.
But you're right. In many ways. I'd even forgotten about Kirsten Wiig's mom. But yeah, so, you know, Lily Tomlin just absolutely steals the movie.
Okay, so score this one for us, Yasdi.
So, you know, this is not the best classic romantic comedy ever made. It's not Bringing Up Baby. It's not A Philadelphia Story. It's not even Casablanca. But I think it's a great, smart 2 hours spent at the cinemas. And, you know, I'm really getting tired of movies where the humor is self-aware, postmodern, hyper-cynical, you know, raunchy humor. I'm sick of it now. I want humor which comes from the heart. I want humor which is simple. And this movie kind of hit all those notes for me. It's really very good-natured and it's smart. I don't see that combination of smart and good-natured very often. So it worked really well for me. I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10.
Oh,
I would have normally given it a 7, just because somebody has to stand up for it. You know, I'm going to give it an 8 out of 10. I mean, do see it.
That's interesting because, I mean, we had the same reaction to Burt Wonderstone, right?
Yeah,
I mean, we all quite like that movie, and yet that was another one that took a beating in the press. I'm just wondering what's going on here. I mean, the tomatometer is a little off at the moment for me. One of the things that I think is great to be, you know, in our position where we get to see all these movies all the time is that we do get to see them. Like, we get to see movies that... Had I relied on the tomatometer, I wouldn't have gone to see Burt Wonderstone.
Right.
You know, and that was a very good yardstick for me many times when deciding what to see.
I think it's not cool to be honest. It's not cool to be heartfelt. You have to be cynical and edgy and all that stuff. And which is fine, but not all the time.
That aren't scoring well on these, like, you know, aggregators. Because, you know, what's the other one? Metacritic. Mm-hmm. And they all seem to, like, they all seem to swing wildly. You know, you have movies that are just... universal love, and then you have movies that are universally panned, and there's very few that kind of hover around the middle.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I think we're all becoming sensitized to funny is rude and dirty and smutty, and, you know, good heartfelt comedies, just, you know, whoever gave anything good and heartfelt a good score. I'm excited to speak about one that's coming up on our next podcast that might meet that criteria, though, Yazdeen. You might be, you know, I know you wanted to see that one, which was Starbuck.
Yes.
So I'm excited to talk about that one in our next one.
Cool. Well, we're going to record that straight after this.
Yes.
So I guess we can wrap up this episode. Mail at moviewellness.com. Let us know what you think of these movies. Let us know your thoughts on the tomatometer as well, because I'm starting to lose a little bit of faith in it. It seems to be more wrong than right for me these days, so be interested to see what you guys think. Mail at moviewallers.com, facebook.com/moviewallers, twitter.com/moviewallers as well. Until our next episode, it's, as always, too many movies, too little time. A good night from me.
And me.
And me as well.